friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hi, Levi.
Hello, Jen.
Hello.
Today, we are starting our coverage of the Crystal Tower Raid series.
Yay!
In today's episode, we will be talking about the history of the Crystal Tower and the Elegans in general, looking at the events that led to its creation and its current state. We'll also be talking about Alliance raids in general.
Yeah.
So we can jump right into the story next time with no preamble. So, Jen.
Yeah.
In Final Fantasy XIV,
uh-huh.
The Crystal Tower is an Alliance raid series. This used to be an optional piece of content, but with the Shadowbringers expansion, they made this mandatory for all players.
Nice.
You cannot leave a Realm Reborn without beating Crystal Tower.
Darn tootin'.
Alliance raids, as most of us know, are 24-player dungeons. Players are split into three groups consisting of one tank, two healers, and five DPS per group. Sadly, though, even with that reduced tank ratio compared to other content, most fights are only needing one tank, leaving the other tanks stuck as being worse DPS, unless the main tank goes down, which is very rare in anything but brand new content.
Yeah.
Or you get situations where the tanks will slap fight over who is the main tank, having provoke wars or just leaving their stance on, causing the boss to spin around and drop cleaves on everyone else, and ruining those positionals.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Even though on my main character I play as a tank for almost all content, I run Alliance raids as healer because I don't want to deal with that tank meta. It's annoying and it's
right?
Boring.
Yeah. I don't recall anybody ever coordinating, you know, or asking any of the other tanks in the other alliances, like, hey, who wants to take this? There's no coordination. It's just like, fucking go.
Someone is going to go for it. And if two people have the same alpha tank mindset, then we're going to get those slap fights unless one bows down.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No, it's a bad dynamic.
I haven't seen a tank fight for a while, thankfully. I've been only doing the Endwalker raids in the past several months. And in those, people tend to just say, okay, you got it, fine.
Yeah.
I have seen some pretty bad stuff in Crystal Tower, especially.
Oh, yeah.
Including on one boss in the third dungeon, which has a very nasty beam attack that can get dropped on the party if the tanks are not, you know, playing together nicely.
And then that's usually where people are cutting their teeth anyway, so shit's gonna be weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
Otherwise, though, besides that, this content tends to be very chill and shouldn't be intimidating for anyone. 24 players sounds like a lot, but it pretty much means that you get lost in the crowd, and if you make a mistake, nobody cares. There are 23 other players out there to do stuff.
Pretty much.
Or more likely, if you make a mistake, there's other people who've made the same mistake through sheer numbers, so you're not alone.
Yeah, there is comfort in that.
And also, speaking as someone who plays a healer in these things, I welcome inexperienced players because otherwise I'm just mashing that one attack button 95% of the time.
Yeah.
So please come in and make mistakes and give me something to do as a healer.
Also ask questions. If it's your first time in an Alliance raid, there are some things that are, I don't know, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself.
You're good.
But you have like, you know, Alliance A, B, and C. You figure out which one you are. And sometimes what you have to do in these things is you're split up by party, and all three of you have to do independent things before you all get back together again. And sometimes it's hard to know, like, you know, the little esoteric mechanics and things that you have to do for that shit. So just, you can just ask. It's all good.
I feel like they kind of dropped that design model in more recent content.
But recent content, yes.
In the earlier raids, yes, there are definitely places that you do break up with your alliance and you will go do a separate place, separate mechanic, whatever.
Yep. But again, you know, run around, somebody might say something or not, and it should be fine either way.
That said, the change to 24 players can be a little bit abrupt. And on my first playthrough, when I ran into the Crystal Tower unlock quests and learned that they were for 24 players, I actually abandoned the quest. So I was like, nope, not for me.
Wow.
Because my prior MMO experience had been with World of Warcraft, like the original version of that. And my only comparison to that scale of content was Molten Core, which is a 40-person real-life consuming raid in that game. So I was like, this must be for hardcore players, not for me, softcore. So I just gave it a pass, and I kept on trucking until the MSQ made me go back and do it, which I'm grateful for, because otherwise I would have assumed it's not for me.
Wow. Damn.
Even so, going into Crystal Tower for the first time and seeing 23 other players can be quite a bit overwhelming.
Yes, I'm trying to recall, like, my first time. It was the weirdest thing. It just seemed weird. And I also didn't know to look for, like, which one I was in. You know, ABC.
Oh, sure.
I just thought it was, like, all one big party.
There's no tutorial, obviously. You just get dropped in there and you see all these players. And because it's Crystal Tower, these people have done it dozens, if not hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. They're all just on autopilot, just running to the next objective.
I guess I'll follow all of them. Keep up and do your best. Yeah.
Again, if you fail, it's okay. You're not going to cause anyone grief. It's okay. But at the same time, though, just seeing these people who have this thing down pat, they are on a different level than you entirely as a first timer.
Yeah.
Any other Alliance raid generalities, Jen, from you? Any other thoughts? Comma, non-specific?
Not at the moment, but I'm sure they'll pop up as
okay.
We
go. So in the game's story, long-term players probably feel like the tower is an integral part of the world, especially in light of later content in the game. The tower, though, and all the foes within are 90% lifted directly out of Final Fantasy III. The Crystal Tower is the endgame dungeon of Final Fantasy III, and it follows almost the exact same progression as our Crystal Tower does, starting in the Labyrinth of the Ancients, even.
Weird.
These three phases of our tower are the exact same as that tower from beginning to end.
Cool.
And all the characters along the way are also almost one-to-one analogs from FF3.
Wow.
So if you're ever wondering why anything is anything in the Crystal Tower series, it's because it's quoting number three.
Mm-hmm.
If you're wondering why this enemy is here, why this place is here, it's just following that same progression.
Okay.
It's pretty shocking, actually. However, I think that the devs have done a very good job of giving those characters a place in our world, such that you wouldn't question them these days if you did not know that they had a different source beyond a creation specific to our game world.
Yeah, I didn't know that, and I was like, this seems fine. Seems totally normal. Nothing weird.
Interestingly,
checks out.
Final Fantasy III has another leg of the dungeon beneath the Crystal Tower called Eureka, the Forbidden Land. This was a vault of powerful weapons of the Ancients. Eureka, though, is not part of Final Fantasy XIV's Crystal Tower progression.
Not at all.
So here's the very brief story of Number 3, and in the very old games, the story is very cursory in general. It's not rich in dialogue and characters and so on. If you don't want spoilers for a very old game, then skip forward about 2 minutes. In 3, a mage named Zandi was a student of a master named Noah, along with his fellow students Uni and Doga. Noah gave Zandi the gift of mortality, but this drove him mad with thoughts of his own death, causing him to seek to cover the world in darkness. The Warriors of Light in that game worked to reverse the damage done, eventually leading up to a confrontation against Zandi in the Crystal Tower. The Warriors kill Zandi, And in so doing, they unleash a force of darkness in the world called the Cloud of Darkness, the true force behind Zondi's actions. So these warriors must venture into the World of Darkness to defeat the cloud, restoring the balance of light and darkness to the world.
Yep.
Anyway, that's three story. Now let's talk about some elegans.
Let's.
Jin, elegans. What's the deal?
What's the deal with elegans?
This is meant to serve as a collection of general elegan lore that is present in the game world and in external sources. However, I've done my best here to omit any elegan lore drops that are revealed as story beats in future Final Fantasy XIV content. I would consider moments such as discovering Bahamut's power source in Coils to be a story spoiler. We'll be avoiding discussion of any other such revelations as best we can. That said, today we will be talking about the elegan spoilers revealed in the Coil storyline, since we've already hit that on the podcast.
Yep.
We'll also be talking about the Crystal Tower in a general sense, including the elegan history that contextualizes the upcoming events in the tower, but we are not going to be talking about any specific story beats in the Crystal Tower yet.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Jen.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, if they couldn't tell already, this is a preliminary, a little like a lore dump that Levi has done. I haven't taken, this is just where I kind of listen and learn along with all y'all. I do not have any notes of my own, so it'll be mostly Levi talking.
You've been warned.
Yeah.
So the elegans were an ancient empire that reigned in the third astral era, ages and ages ago.
Mm.
Today, you can't go two zones without tripping over some elegan relics, ruins, whatever, thanks in part to Dalamud littering Eorzea with its fragments, but that wasn't always the case. In the time after its fall, the elegan empire disappeared into all but legend. It wasn't until the sixth astral era that proof of their existence was rediscovered.
Hmm.
This discovery was made by one Koinok, now known as Saint Koinok. He was an Ul'dan seminarian in the Order of Nalthal. Though a prodigious student, his superiors were immensely disappointed when Koinok decided to go off chasing myths about the elegan empire rather than devote himself to his religious studies.
Right?
So wild was this pursuit at the time that Koinok was expelled from the seminary and shunned by his peers, but he was not deterred.
Good for him.
He devoted his entire life towards collecting any scrap of information he could about the elegans, pouring all of his wealth into the pursuit. And finally, after 50 years, just 1 year before his death, Koinok finally found tangible proof of the elegans in Mordona.
Good lord.
This, of course, is the site known as St. Koinok's Find, where we'll be spending quite a bit of time in the upcoming questline. Speaking of Saint Koinok, he was canonized after his death, not by the Order of Nalthal, but by the followers of Althic, the scholar.
Aw, yeah.
Puissant Althic.
Puissant.
Mordona does indeed host elegan ruins, and their discovery has been greatly assisted by the Battle of Silvertear Skies and the subsequent Calamity, dramatically shifting the landscape and revealing the Motherlode, the Crystal Tower.
Where was it? Or was it just like shrouded in like a, you know, a cloaking device?
It was buried beneath the Earth Gen for events that you'll learn about soon enough.
Okie dokie.
So this is the birth of modern elegan studies. Though more common now, their artifacts are still highly prized and coveted. But we'll go back in time though, Jin, to the elegans themselves now. The third astral era was born by the Calamity of Fire. This calamity was widely believed to be divine retribution against the religious excesses and holy wars of the second era. Consequently, people were hesitant to put themselves close to the gods. Instead, they looked to the talents of their fellows to uplift themselves. So the third astral era was marked by great discoveries in science and technology, advancing at an incredible speed. At the forefront of this scientific and geographic expansion was Zandi. Zandi was an intelligent and charismatic leader that harnessed the knowledge of the New Age to grow his nation, Alag. But he also did not neglect the powers of the Second Era. Descendants of that era's magic users and priests that still practiced their arts were welcomed into the Alagan fold. And the armies of this growing nation, with their combined technological and magical prowess, were unmatched. And soon, Alag became an empire. This combination of magic and technology was key to Alagan expansion. The fusion of them was named etherochemistry, and it was applied to all aspects of Alagan life.
Yeah.
But, of course, Zandi would not last forever. His carefully groomed offspring would carry on his legacy after he passed, expanding the empire across the three great continents. Emperor Zandi himself would be entombed in a crystalline cavern beneath Mordona, rich in ethereal energy. Once their conquest of the great continents was done, the Alagans turned inwards to improve the lives of their own citizens, developing new technologies and works for the betterment of all. One such improvement was the Crystal Tower, or as it's called by the Alagans, Circus Tower. The tower was created to provide power to the empire. This towering crystalline structure collected the rays of the sun, turning these energies towards the homes and manufactories of its citizens. With this power source facilitating the use of even more machina, the Alagans could spend less time in labor and more time on themselves. Aspirationally, it was thought that they would use this time to better their minds and souls, and indeed, for three full centuries, there was no sign of war in the empire. But rather than seek spiritual enlightenment, the Alagan citizenry turned increasingly towards pursuits of pleasure and idleness. There was no drive left for them.
Right.
The population began to decline, and its leadership became increasingly corrupt, leading to uprisings within the empire. Seeing the decline of his beloved empire, a technologist named Aemon decided to intervene. It was his belief that the Alagans needed a strong leader to right their course and restore glory to the empire. A leader like Emperor Zandi. Rather than look for a replacement, though, Aemon decided to look to Zandi himself. To restore the long-dead emperor to life, Aemon began to pursue the secrets of eternal life, pushing the boundaries of Alagan fields of etherochemistry and chimera biology, even experimenting on Alagan citizens. Once he was satisfied with these early experiments, he went on to experiment on Zandi's descendants and finally on himself. And when he was finally assured these techniques would work, Aemon went on to apply them to Zandi's exhumed body. And as far as it seemed, the process worked. Aemon had restored life to Emperor Zandi. And after being briefed on the current state of his empire, Zandi got right to work. He had the current emperor assassinated, along with any loyalists to the old regime.
Jesus Christ.
Once he had secured power internally, Zandi restored the Alagan army to its full might and turned it upon a new foe, the Mericidians.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Mericidia, home of the dragons, among many other peoples, had been left out of the initial Alagan conquest of the three great continents, at least great by certain standards.
Sure, yeah. As in they were easy. Great.
Great. Three continents. Great. There was no reason for Alag to invade Mericidia except to galvanize the Alagans into a cause. And it worked, though, reinvigorating the Alagan citizenry, at least for now. The peoples of Mericidia, under the leadership of the dragons, soon mobilized against the invaders. And at first they fought back successfully, but this challenge gave further reason for the Alagans to practice their ingenuity, and they concocted new tools of destruction to overcome this obstacle. The Alagans developed new chimera and thrust them into the conflict, and with these new weapons they slew the mightiest of the dragons, Bahamut. This seemed at first like a victory, but the Mericidians revealed a new countermeasure, primal summoning. Though there are no records of any summonings of primals on Mericidia before this event, several Mericidian tribes summoned their gods shortly after Bahamut's defeat. A suspicious coincidence.
Though it is possible that the conditions were just so that it happened organically.
Organically across numerous disparate peoples?
All at the same time?
Yes.
Oh, then no. Okay, 6 primals had been summoned within the span of a week. Okay, that's weird.
Yes.
But, you know, one randomly
no,
in a time of great...
No, it is multiple primals
that changes,
around
that changes
the
it.
Exact same timeline.
Yep, okay.
Some of these gods are involved in a Heaven's Ward optional quest series. For those that know, this is when those primals were summoned. Zandi demanded a solution to this recurring problem. Even if a primal were defeated, it was summoned anew. Among the innovations that the Allegans developed to combat the primals was the Ultima Weapon, the foe we recently defeated in the Praetorium. Another development was the Summoner's Art. For those who have played through the Summoner quest line, they know that our Summoner Warrior of Light gained their skills through a recovered Allegan Summoner's Soul Crystal. These summoners could draw upon a primal's power to manifest their own creation, the Eggy. And the Allegans used these new abilities to defeat and imprison the primals rather than slay them, thus preventing future summonings. This innovation allowed the Allegans to defeat the Maricidian tribes, but then the Maricidian dragons elected to attempt their own summoning. The worm Tiamat elected to lead the dragons in summoning back her beloved Bahamut as a primal, who unleashed his might to devastating effect. It is speculated that Tiamat's grief for her beloved would taint the primal's nature, causing the icon Bahamut to be incarnated mad with rage. Emperor Zandi welcomed this push and pull of the Maricidian battlefield, seeing it as the opportunity the Allegans needed to grow and strengthen themselves further. In this pursuit of knowledge and power, the Allegan mages made contact with the Void Sent. Zandi saw these beings as another tool to be used, and he forged a pact with a Void Sent leader, the so-called ruler of the Void, the Cloud of Darkness. In exchange for vessels in his world to host the Void Sent, they would fight on the Empire's behalf against the Maricidians. And each slain enemy made a new vessel for the Void Sent, and so the Void Sent army grew vast on its own slaughter. At the same time, the Maricidians' elemental crystals grew scarce as Bahamut's form required a vast supply of energy to maintain. Ultimately, the Void Sent supplemented Allegan army would overcome him through sheer attrition, and the primal was imprisoned. This marked the ultimate defeat of the Maricidians.
Gross.
Now, Emperor Zandi had no more foes to fight, and this left him feeling empty. He had no interest in reigning in a time of peace. He became obsessed with destruction. And so he ordered that the bound Bahamut be encapsulated in a massive sphere to be launched into the heavens, Delamud. Bahamut would serve as a more effective focus for the sun's energies, and could provide far more energy to Circus Tower than its passive solar collection could. This energy could be harnessed towards more destruction. The exact details of this endeavor will unfold during the Crystal Tower storyline, so stay tuned for that in the next few episodes. But the Allegans overall did not support the Emperor's ongoing efforts, this pursuit of even more power and destructive force. The populace began to rebel against the Emperor, ultimately forcing him and his loyalists out of the palace. They retreated to Circus Tower, intent on activating Delamud. And they did. But as Bahamut began channeling energy towards the tower, a flaw became apparent in their calculations. The land upon which the tower stood could not withstand the energies being channeled down from the heavens to the surface. The earth ruptured, swallowing the tower whole. This triggered a chain reaction of tremors that rippled across the entire realm, devastating the empire.
Whoa.
The calamity of Earth.
Uh-huh.
Even those that survived the initial destruction still found themselves bereft of their power source, as the Empire was reliant upon Circus Tower for its energy.
Oops.
And there we have it, Jen. The rise and fall of the Allegan Empire, and the reason why the Crystal Tower was lost beneath the Earth, only to be exhumed again by the most recent calamity.
Beep. I'm back. Thank you. Can you imagine for a second, like, if somebody exhumed George Washington and brought him back to life, like, you know what, we need a real leader again, and then just paraded undead George Washington in front of everybody, and were like, hey guys, we're good now. We brought him back. He's just gonna carry on like he did 300 years ago, and you all are gonna be super okay with it. Yeah, it was just like, oh, this is great. Yeah, he did really well back then. He should be still fine. That's just...
I guarantee some people would be hella into that gin.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know. It's just, you know, just imagine you're like an elegant citizen, do-do-do-do-do-do, and your whole life and your parents' lives, grandparents' lives, etc. In textbooks, you've been learning about, oh, you know, the great... old, you know, the emperor of ages past who was responsible for the state of our you know, like, and then suddenly he's alive again and bossing you around and taking you to war, and like, it's just it's weird.
It is weird. I agree, Jin.
Yeah,
it's weird.
So just, that's all,
just imagine,
if you will. And then and also, you know, Maricidians having to fight they're like their own people who have been possessed by Void Scent.
Oh, Maricidia got fucked in the deal.
Yeah, no, it's...
They didn't do anything wrong. They just existed
war and... War crimes.
Oh, yes. Absolutely, yes. And we haven't even seen the full extent of it, Jin. Pending future content.
I mean, you would think that, you know, what we saw during the Binding of Coils, or the Binding Coils of Bahamut series, how is that not enough? How is that not a display of, like, peak heinousness?
It's pretty fucked up still, yes, Jin.
Oh, my God.
But there's more.
It's great.
But wait, Jin, there's more.
Always.
Any other thoughts on the Allegan's Jin?
Well, I mean, I got opinions. They're not good, but that's nothing new.
That's not a hot take. I'm sorry, Jin.
No, it's not. Absolutely not. I got nothing else except for, you know, the average citizen was just not an evil person, as we all are. We're just trying to live our lives and be nice and enjoy the simple pleasures. And the powers that be are consumed by hate and avarice and just lead society to the path of destruction.
Something else that we're... not sure about yet, Jin, but will be in a few episodes.
What are we not sure about right now?
The other thing that the leadership is consumed by.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jin's forgotten the entire quest line.
No, I have. That's why. I was happy to sit down and listen because I forgot all of it.
We are playing through it again starting next time, Jin.
Woo!
Speaking of, we will be beginning next episode, the first leg of this journey, delving into the Labyrinth of the Ancients.
See you then. Right?
See you then.
And that will do it for today's episode. Just a little something-something to get the ball rolling on this this whole series. So buckle up. I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you guys so much for listening and being you and being awesome. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can at podreturnffxiv@gmail.com or check the show notes for our Discord. You can join up and talk about your character, your current objective in the game, share screenshots, share glams, and join us for group runs. And those are going to be picking back up again for the series, so yay! And we also have our Patreon, which is patreon.com/podreturnffxiv. And for $1 a month, you get some bonus content. Release it monthly-ish, and it covers a wide range of random bullshit, so check that out. And also, a freebie episode we posted for anybody to listen to. We recently were in Japan, and we visited the Cafe Eorzea's in both Tokyo and Osaka. And we do a little contrast compare on the both if you wanted to check that out. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night. And we will see you next time.